AM Jackson. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Nate Wiggehoe. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The Wisconsin Supreme Court is considering whether to hear a lawsuit to overturn the state's school choice program. WisPolitics reports conservative Justice Rebecca Bradley says the high court should have rejected the lawsuit. She says it's a policy matter for lawmakers to consider and not a matter for the courts. Chief Justice Annette Ziegler joined Bradley's dissent. Interested parties have until the 14th to weigh in. Open enrollment in the health insurance marketplace is underway. Democratic state lawmakers are reintroducing bills they say will make health care in Wisconsin better and more affordable. One bill would expand Badger Care eligibility for some people up to 133% of the federal poverty level. Another bill would create a Badger Care public option to buy health coverage on the state exchange. I'm Nate Wiggehoe, Civic Media News.
The Badgers getting ready to face the Hoosiers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers will be on the road this weekend to take on Indiana at Memorial Stadium. With a growing list of injuries, does that mean that opportunities for other players to get more playing time? Badgers head coach Luke Fickell.
Yeah, there's potential for a lot of guys to get on the field in these final four games. Haven't played at all, you know, with the rule of, you know, allowing young guys that they got four games. So there could be some situations where we start to throw some guys in, maybe special teams.
NFL. The news sinking in here at Lambeau Field that defensive back Rasul Douglas is no longer in the building. The Packers traded him to the Bills for a third-round pick and essentially to take money off the salary cap for next year. Jair Alexander asked, how did he find out the news?
I actually found out this morning coming into work, so I made sure I text him right away. I didn't expect Rasul to be gone. You know, he's a vet throughout his time here. It's just the NFL.
That's Packers defensive back Jair Alexander. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy tonight with a low of 26. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy tomorrow, high of 45. 34 tomorrow night, mainly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw.
540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
Send Elements CEO Mike O'Cronley on CNBC.
We're collecting batteries from the field and bringing them back in and making new battery materials out of them. The fact that we are getting a certain amount of government support has really also helped catalyze some of the investors, the private money that is coming in.
And remember, EV batteries can be recycled and reused. Fossil fuels can't.
In Deep Red, Kentucky. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, latest reports coming out. They're saying that, be aware, the Chinese are planning to interfere in the elections coming up this year and next. And look, not surprising, the weaponization of information, the dividing us on our fault lines, not a shock. But the question becomes, how do we detect BS? I think my grandfather had an incredible BS detector, but he also didn't have social media constantly hammering insanity and weaponizing the information that he had. How do we fight back? How do we get good information? How do we talk to each other again? And that's why I've asked Andy Norman to come talk with us. Andy is the founder of the Cognitive Immunology Research Collaborative Circle. He's also the chief catalyst behind the Mental Immunity Project, a collaboration between Circle and the organization Thinking is Power. I know a lot there, but I'm sure Andy's going to explain it. Andy, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's a pleasure to be here. The short version of what you just said is I like to think about thinking, and like a lot of people trained in philosophy, I try to work out better ways to spot BS and help people master the art of spotting BS.
Well, no, we need you today, buddy. Because look, you know, the reality is we're being inundated in every direction with ideological BS. Some of it good, some of it bad. A lot of it, I believe, completely disingenuous, just for clickbaiting. Because hey, as Les Moonves said, you know, Trump may be bad for democracy, but he's good for the bottom line. And there are a lot of people who think that way. Don't care if it's true or not. Don't care what it is. Just as long as you're clicking on it and I make some money, that is a real problem.
Well, there are a lot of people these days who are making their living by fooling people, by generating information that gets people to spend money on things they don't need or to vote for people who don't serve their interests. And if we don't learn how to spot this mis and disinformation, we become suckers of those who use these very powerful media platforms to play with our emotions. So we want to free people from this kind of manipulative influence. And there's some tried and true tricks for this that go back thousands of years. Some of my philosophical forebears were worried about this problem in ancient Greece. But of course, the problem's taking new forms these days, and we need to bring new scientific perspectives to the task as well.
Now, you know, I've had people say, well, you know, how can we stop this misinformation? Because look, I'm sure you know this as well as anyone. AI is going to be a major dividing force for good, maybe, but I think mostly for bad. I mean, I've seen some deep fakes that I expect heavy next year that are just scary good that you go, wow, we've got a moment where, you know, technology is a killer as well as, you know, the human mind through social media. How do we stop some of this? I guess we could shut off all the social media and we could, you know, shut down newspapers and radios. We could do all that. I don't think it's possible.
Right.
But we could figure out maybe how to educate people. Now, you guys have said over at your group that, you know, researchers have found the brain has an immune system to fight off misinformation.
That's right.
Explain that.
Yeah. So our bodies evolved over eons in a world just full of infectious microbes, and we had to develop immune systems to survive. And these immune systems do a pretty good job of fighting off disease-bearing bugs, but of course sometimes the bugs win. Sometimes the bugs circumvent our body's defenses and make us sick. Well, it turns out that our minds have been evolving alongside infectious information for probably millions of years, certainly hundreds of thousands. And they've gotten pretty good at spotting bad information. But pretty good isn't good enough.
Yeah, because I was going to say, Andy, I mean, I got to tell you, I was just reading, you know, Adam Kinzinger, the congressman from Illinois, statement that, you know, his family sent him a letter, certified letter, disowning him because he's fallen out of favor with Sean Hannity. I'm going, wait a second. I don't know that. I don't think the misinformation, gene or, you know, the pathogens are helping in that case. And look, I know a lot of people who've, you know, bought the red hat stuff, who have cut off family, who have cut off sanity. So I'm hoping that there is a way to fight this off. I just think maybe we've got a lot of people who are suffering from the disease and not, maybe they don't have the immune system yet.
Well, it turns out we can all develop our mental immune systems the same way that we can strengthen our body's immune system with vaccines and by eating right, getting good enough sleep. You can strengthen your mind's immune system by learning certain habits of mind, by learning how to bring certain attitudes to the table when you're dealing with challenging information. So when somebody comes along and challenges your belief, what do? You freak out and you fight back and you denounce them? Or do you say, let me think about that. Maybe you've got a point. Let me see if I can learn from you. The second attitude will strengthen your mind's immune system over time. The first attitude will allow you to become, will cause you to fall down rabbit holes and get stuck in them. So you need to learn to not to overreact to challenging information and to actually hear different points of view without freaking out. And every skilled thinker for thousands of years has learned how to master this. And there's entire branches of philosophy devoted to how you should handle yourself in these situations. But now it's time to update these sort of ancient philosophical truths, update it with this new science of the mind's immune system, and translate it into practical things people can use, because we're facing a very tough information environment with the internet and of course AI, as you point out.
Yeah, how do you get there though? Because, you know, look, I try, you know, when people come to me with different ideas, I challenge my own beliefs virtually every day. I try and tear my beliefs down every day because of what I do here. Because someone's always going to question what I believe, and I got to defend that. And I think I've done a pretty good job of that over the last 18 years of doing this program. But most people aren't, you know, fortunate like I am to have this kind of a gig where I have to do that. Yeah. I look at, you know, social media, and virtually everything I see is on one particular, has one particular bent to it. So if everything looks like, you know, if you got a hammer and everything looks like a nail, it doesn't matter if it's a screw or a glass dish. It still looks like a hammer or to a nail to most people.
Yeah, just like we need a varied diet for our bodies, we need a varied diet for our minds. Like if you're getting all your information from Fox News, you're going to get manipulated by Fox News. If you're getting all your information from the New York Times, then the New York Times assumptions are going to sneak into your mind and possibly color the way you view things. So you need a varied information diet. You need to talk to people who disagree with you. You need to learn to treat their views as something you can learn from. Because the moment you start to think you have all the answers and everybody else is deluded, that's when you stop learning and your mind becomes sort of closed and rigid.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Andy, and you know, I've been saying lately, and maybe I'm a little too biased, that, you know, the Republican Party right now seems, or at least some of them, seem to lie a little differently than they ever did in the past. In the past, there was always a kernel of truth to the lie. There was always something to the conspiracy where you go, oh, yeah, I can see kind of how you got there. It just seems like now conspiracies are made up out of whole cloth. You know, like, yeah. Hey, there's a child porn ring in the bottom of a pizza shop in the basement where there's no basement. But, you know, but people buy it because this is what's being thrown out there and regurgitated time and time and time again. What is it about these conspiracies that grab people?
Yeah, well, I mean, for a while, I think the right wing has learned that they can manipulate minds by manipulating information. And because they've done that so successfully, they just keep doubling down and doubling down and doubling down on the lies. And the lies get more and more outrageous. I mean, and the Comet ping pong pedophile ring in the basement of a pizza shop is what, just part of a kind of a much larger QAnon thing, which is just full, just loaded with nonsense. In fact, I like to call it QAnon sense because that's kind of, that stuff does not withstand even a modicum of scrutiny, but it's really seductive stuff, especially if you're feeling desperate. And by the way, we know this about the mind's immune system. The more desperate and alienated you feel, the more prone you are to conspiracy thinking.
No, so, you know, my mind is now going, yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of these folks that I know who are the Q world, these are people who don't have anything better to do but sit on, because I've read some of these things. These are people who need to get lives. But here's the thing. You know, I have an acquaintance who is deep into the Q stuff, and they truly believe they're out there fighting, you know, child sex trafficking. They haven't found it yet, but they believe it's out there. And it's that belief that you just can't shake the believer. Right. I've found you can't really talk to the believer. So as someone who thinks the way you do that, you know, we need to fight misinformation, and how do you deal with the believer, or do we just move along?
Yeah. So what the research tells us is that it's much easier to prevent a mind infection than to cure one. So if you can prevent somebody from falling down a rabbit hole, that's a lot easier than trying to haul them out of a rabbit hole. So if we have a limited amount of resources to spend on this, it makes sense to do what's called pre-bunking instead of debunking. So the people who are already in the deep end of QAnon, I don't know, it takes a lot of work to rescue somebody from the QAnon rabbit hole. But if you go out and you teach kids who haven't yet fallen under its spell how to spot the nonsense and how to ignore it, you can save 10 times as many kids.
Right. So we're talking about saving the future. We're just writing those folks off. And I don't disagree with that. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Andy Norman. Andy's the founder of the Cognitive Immunology Research Collaborative Circle, also the chief catalyst behind the Mental Immunity Project. Tell me about that. The Mental Immunity Project. If you want to check out their website, obviously mentalimmunityproject.org. We'll get links out on social media. Tell me, what is that?
Yeah, so the Circle, or CIRCE, is kind of our institute for pointy-headed scholars who like to think about this stuff. But Mental Immunity Project is our attempt to kind of make this stuff practical for people who can't spend all their time thinking about it. So the Mental Immunity Project, we have a website set up for it, and we basically reduced it to 10 simple lessons that you can learn each one in about a minute. You can learn each of these 10 fundamental principles, each of which can strengthen your mind's immune system and make you a better at spotting BS. I'm not saying it's a magic bullet. I'm not saying 10 minutes is enough. 10 minutes will get you started down this path. But once you learn the basics, it can actually become a virtuous circle. You learn how to ask questions, the right kind of questions. You learn not to get sucked into the kind of over-the-top suspicions that drive, say, flat theory. You learn to distinguish reliable from unreliable information, and it puts you on a path to a life where you're just basically making better decisions left and right.
And now you've got a book, you know, titled Mental Immunity as well. It came out a year or two ago. I'm sure that would help, right?
Yeah, that book is the first several chapters are meant for a general audience, and the later chapters are meant for a more scholarly audience. But I do recommend the book, the website I mentioned, the Mental Immunity Project website, tries to make it just super fun and easy and accessible.
So let me ask you the last line of questioning I've got for you, because I tend to be a little pessimistic on the front of, you know, we're going to be able to hold back the onslaught of AI. I mean, you're seeing stories every day that AI is just reinforcing all of the horrible stereotypes and horrible misinformation that's being shoved down our throat. Do you have faith, hope? Do you have any positive thoughts that you can share with me that you think that it's going to be okay? Or you know, because my mind is like, man, trouble on the horizon with all of the people around the world who, you know, Iran and China and Russia and all the people with their misinformation weaponizing our information to pit us against each other. I got real struggles. You?
Two things are true. AI is going to be super disruptive, and it's going to change the information environment in ways that we don't have antibodies for right now. Lawrence Lessig, a lawyer who fights for the working class and against corruption for years, has just said the AIs are going to create all kinds of information misinformation that we don't have cognitive antibodies for. And he's right. And there's serious cause for concern there. It's also true that it's very easy for our fears about these things to spiral out of control, especially because when there's so much that's unknown. I'm going to be meeting just in a couple of days with some of the top thinkers in the world on this, some of whom think that we ought to be pushing the alarm button, and others who are saying, hang on, if you calm your mind down and think this thing through with analogous cases, it may not be as bad as all that. So don't panic yet. I don't quite know where I stand on this. I'm hearing good arguments on both sides, but I know this, that if I panic, I'm not going to be part of the solution.
No, that's an excellent point. And I know I said that this is the last question, but since you got into this, I got to ask, the Biden administration, Biden just put a new executive order for some new rules on AI.
Yeah.
And look, I think that's about a decade too late. I've been screaming for quite a while to get ahead of technology and, maybe figuring out how we ease into it. Look, I'm not a Luddite. I don't think we smash the machines. I don't see how we can. I don't think we can restrain this for too long, but there's got to be some parameters where we go, yeah, there's got to be some accountability. So do you have any thoughts on the executive order? Is it going to be helpful? Well, is there a way to restrain this? I know that's a lot, but I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, first of all, hallelujah for the general point you're making. Absolutely, there needs to be accountability. Absolutely, there need to be guidelines and limits. If Congress had been serving us well, we'd have a well-developed regulatory framework that helps to keep information technology something that enhances our lives instead of tears our nation apart. We've got a lot of catching up to do. I think the Biden administration effort on this, from what I've read, is a very nice start in the right direction. There's a lot more that needs to be done.
And that's the answer. There is a lot more that needs to be done. But Andy Norman, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Hope folks will take a look at the book, Mental Immunity. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Also, check out their website, mentalimmunityproject.org. Andy Norman, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. It's been a pleasure, and let's do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com, or right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I like Andy's energy. I like the idea that, you know, hey, you know, maybe calm down. Because in this world, I tend to see how bad this can be. Because I've seen some of these deep fakes. Scary stuff. And look, there's enough misinformation in our politics already than to have ads of, you know, of politicians saying, you know, stupid stuff that they would never say. And this, again, there's part of me that, you know, doesn't freak out by going, look, I know Joe Biden's never going to come out and say, no, unions shouldn't exist. You know, he's not going to come out and say some of the craziness. But you're going to see some really bizarre stuff coming on. And look, our politics have gotten so, so bizarre. For instance, there's a guy running for Senate. I think maybe he lives in Pennsylvania, maybe he doesn't. Last I knew, he was in Connecticut. You know, there's, who knows? But Dave McCormick is evidently running for Senate here in Pennsylvania, and he was on a podcast, and evidently on the podcast, you know, they've got nothing else to talk about. They were talking about the biggest animal that he could fight. Yeah, I know. And the quote, and this is what stopped me. You got this guy who is in his 50s. You know, he's probably an older guy. He says, I think I can take a bear. If I could get a bear right pre-hibernation or post-hibernation, and I hadn't eaten much, and he hadn't eaten much, or he had eaten much, I'm long on McCormick. And you go, wait a second. I have a couple of different thoughts on this. One, here's a guy who's totally full of it, totally full of himself. And, you know, one of those guys that, you know, if you ask him, he's done everything, the best at everything. He's the man. Or he's just totally delusional. Because a bear? Now, here's the thing. And I know my animal rights friends are going to lose their mind and be unhappy and send me angry emails. And that's okay. I probably deserve it. But I remember, you know, when I was college age, they used to have wrestle the bear competitions at bars occasionally. And they'd bring in, you know, like a 250, 300-pound bear. They'd get it all drugged up. And they'd put it in a ring and you'd go in and wrestle with it. And the number one thing that they would tell you is, don't make the bear angry. And they said, never punch the bear. Do not punch the bear. You go and wrestle with him. You can wrestle the bear, but don't punch the bear. And I remember a guy who punched the bear. and ticked that bear off. And that bear basically beat this guy senseless. It took like six or seven guys just to get the bear off of him. And so I listened to someone like McCormick with this delusional thinking, a guy who wants to be senator with this kind of delusional self. and I go, this isn't what we need in this state. We don't need people who think that they're heroes.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Hamas has allowed dozens of foreign nationals to leave Gaza and enter Egypt as part of a deal that involved White House negotiators. CBS's Nancy Cordes on some who got out.
Five American women who were escorted safely into Egypt. Most of them were serving in a humanitarian capacity in Gaza and simply got trapped there when the war broke out.
College basketball coach Bobby Knight has died at 83. He helped Indiana University win three NCAA championships, Knight once told CBS Sunday Morning.
More than anything else, I really enjoy this game.
School administrators say there's a growing shortage of school lunch milk and juice cartons. The leading packaging company in North America is said to be having trouble keeping up with demand. But Jennifer Stevenson with the Pickens County, South Carolina school system stresses.
We can get milk. So worst case scenario, maybe we pour milk into cups. I'm not sure. We'll take care of your kids if they need milk or want milk, that we'll have it available in whatever way that is.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. An inmate died at the Waupun State Prison on Monday. That's the third death at Waupun in 4 months. The Dodge County Medical Examiner says autopsy reports won't be ready for a couple of months. The Waupun Prison has been in lockdown since March. The Journal Sentinel reports about 1,000 inmates have to stay in their cells around the clock. Families say they're concerned about health care at the prison. Wisconsin Supreme Court Chief Justice Annette Ziegler delivered the annual State of the Judiciary Address in Lake Geneva on Wednesday. The veteran conservative justice didn't spend much time addressing her clashes with the court's new liberal majority. Chief Ziegler instead focused on improving court security and mental health treatment options for offenders. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
Timeout.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy tonight with a low of 26. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy tomorrow, high of 45. 34 tomorrow night, mainly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 32 degrees.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Very committed to the highest standards of ethical conduct. Seriously? Including the notorious money sleaze, Clarence Thomas? But wait, even a progressive justice, Elena Kagan, joins in the charade that an ethical code might produce, well, ethics, or at least political cover for the lack thereof. A code, she surmises, would, quote, go far in persuading other people that we are adhering to the highest standards of conduct. Hello, would you be persuaded? Yet, these Supremes won't even take this minimal step of adopting a simple code to measure basic integrity. It would be a good idea for us to do it, Barrett meekly says. It would be a good thing for the court to do that, Kagan echoes. This is Jim Hightower saying, stop it. Stop the pitiful posturing. There's only 9 of you. You're in charge. Convene a happy hour, confront reality, and do the right thing. Just do it. I'll buy the beer.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you got a couple of Republican Congress people not seeking re-election. You got Ken Buck, the Republican from Colorado, and Kay Granger from Texas not seeking re-election. And we talked yesterday, Earl Blumenauer from out in Oregon, I think, or Oregon, yeah, not seeking re-election on the Democratic side. And the question is, how many Republicans are going to go, not too crazy, time to go do something else. I'm interested to see, especially today with the Santos thing. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what the next year has in store. And the top stories of the day, our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, here to share some of those thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of Ken Buck and Kay Granger saying, Matt, we're packing it in?
I think you're going to see members leaving. And there was another member that announced, I think it was the day after McCarthy left or something, or when Jordan didn't make it, they had announced. So I think you're going to see it. I served with, I didn't serve with Buck, but I served with Kate and then Earl, who, by the way, met with me many, many times concerning bicycles.
Yep.
So, yeah, with the staff, and he did some really neat things. That we changed the system up there for giving people some passes and things for the bike. So, but anyway, I think some of them have been there a while, like Earl and Kate. But also, I think some people are just going to get tired of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would. You know, people have talked to me about running and things in the past, and somebody said, well, I think maybe you can win. And I said, well, you know what? Maybe I can. Maybe, and that's why I won't run. I might.
And that's the thing, Bob. This is the frightening part
win,
of this.
You know?
This is why I bring this up. The frightening part of this is people who want to do the job, people who want to actually get something accomplished, aren't going to run because it's so badly broken.
Yeah. Well, and it's true. Look, yeah, and people right now might be listening saying, who do you think you are? You can run or anything. But, you know, I have had a lot of people over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years in particular say, why don't you run, you know, this and that. And I tell them in all seriousness, you've got to want to serve, and the place is unrecognizable. I don't think you can accomplish practically anything. No. I really don't. And I think that people that are considering running, but I knew some people that were going to run, absolutely, and they stopped. And it's not for fear of the election. It's because of what's going on in the system. It's in a complete meltdown. You know, Rick, I used to think that I was maybe old because I would say, well, you know, when I was there, but it's not that I'm old. It's the fact that it has changed, and it's disintegrating by the week out there.
Because I was going to ask you, you know, you were, while you were in Congress, you were one of the Gingrich, you know, one of the Contract on America folks.
Yeah.
And I know you're very proud of that, and I'm not going to belittle that, not to your face anyway. but, you know, you were a Republican congressman, and at the time you were on the, you know, the pushing the fringe of the time, I would argue. I'm sure you would argue against that. But you would be, and that class, unrecognizable in today's Republican Party. So if you were to run, where would you find yourself? Do you have a home in the Republican Party?
I can tell you right now. By the way, I never ran the Contract with America ads, and I didn't go out for the signing. I ran my own show. They called me, and I said, I'm not doing it. I'll vote on certain aspects of it, but I'm not going to go out and do that. Because, we always ran our own show. Look, the district had 16% Republican. 16, all right? At the time, Republican Party, I could have two people go to a phone booth. We could have a meeting. I mean, there was, practically no one around. But I was elected, and I went out there. And if I was to run today, no question in my mind, I would have to run as an independent because I would be primaried. First of all, I don't think January 6th was a tourist day, and I would be primaried. I would have to run independent. And think about this, Rick. We used to sign, there were 50 of us, and some of the names, La Tourette, Lo Biondo of New Jersey, I could name them. That we used to sign letters saying, no, we're not going to undo prevailing wage. No, we're not going to support this bill if you're messing with collective bargaining. We used to sign those. Think about that today. where do you think it would end up at?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be politically alive.
No, and for me, that's the problem of where we are. And I agree with your assessment. There's just, because I've had people ask me to run. Hey, how come you don't run for something? I go, because I don't think I can get anything. I can't get the things done that I want to get done. I think I have more, more ability to change hearts and minds doing this or, what we're going to be doing in the future than running for an office of where it's just going to be raising money and throwing bombs.
Look, we had Gingrich. We had Nancy Pelosi. At one time, Gephardt, was the minority leader. We had Nancy Pelosi. You had Bill Clinton, as president. And you had a lot of members that were very strong, very opinionated. They were, some of them were agitators. But never at any point in time when I was there did we have people on a weekly basis saying, that member just said this, we're going to censor him. We're going to take a vote and censure them for saying their opinion. We didn't do that. That alone right now, Rick, if you look at everybody they're trying to censure all the time, that alone in itself is so disruptive to the system, plus the entertainment and Marjorie Taylor Three Names and everything that's going down out there. It's become an entertainment circus, and it's sad. I don't think you could get public policy. Help America Vote Act, it couldn't even survive one hearing, let alone passage.
That's scary stuff. I got to get your thoughts on today's vote on expelling George Santos. I was a little surprised at the numbers. It obviously didn't get the two-thirds vote that it needed. 179, I guess he got 179 votes, 213 voted against the resolution to censure him. 24 Republicans voted with their party, voted to expel Santos. 31 Democrats voted against expelling him. Four Republicans and 15 Democrats voted present. So he's obviously not going to be thrown out. Was this the right choice?
Well, I think so, because it's like Santos, Menendez, he's indicted, and people are saying to Menendez, you need to quit. It's like when they had the I'm having a senior moment. The senator from Minnesota, he was the comedian
Al
at one
Franken.
Time. Al Franken. Al Franken wanted to be taken to the ethics committee, and boom, a domino effect happened, and he was forced out. Now as ridiculous as Santos is, and as guilty as Santos is, and I can say that he's guilty. I mean, guilty is sin. But we still have a system out there that you go through the judiciary. And as ugly as Santos has been, but I'll apply this to Menendez too, because he's got an ugly case. And it's uncomfortable, and, you know, you don't like to see it. But there's a system. And so I think it's the right choice. And I bring up Franken because, you know, I'm not sure Franken should resign whatsoever.
I didn't think he should have either. But the calls on the left were just way too harsh.
They were way out there.
And the right doesn't do that. That's why I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised that they held this vote. I'm sure they knew he wasn't going to go down. I know there's some ethics information coming out on November 15th. But I was a little surprised that this vote happened.
Right. It was the New York. You know, the New York Republic has pushed for this to happen. They're the ones that are uncomfortable the most and have got the heat, you know. So that's where it started. They wanted him out. I happen to know for a fact, feverishly worked with a lot of the Republican members to try to, you know, get him out. And so some people, you know, voted not present. And, of course, we call that the duck pond. Some people just felt, bad as he is, let it go through the system.
I want to get some of your thoughts on the new speaker. There's a lot of things popping up about Mike Johnson, his past. Evidently, he was the dean of a law school that never opened. And look, it was supposedly a law school that was going to open that would be unashamedly embrace biblical worldviews. So I'm like, you know, how bad did you have to be that the religious money said, no, you're too dysfunctional for your law school to open? And also, I guess he partnered with a gay conversion therapy group. So we're now finding out all these little tidbits about Mike Johnson. So I'm curious, is this an unwarranted hit job? And we're just looking for stuff, or could there be a problem here?
I think there's some things out here. You know, first of all, he's the least experienced speaker in the U.S. House in over 140 years, right? The answer he gave on national TV, I would like to have been the reporter, though. You and I talked about this, about, you know, what do you stand on the positions? Well, just, you know, read the Bible. I would love to have said, well, would Jesus support the 1% and let people starve? You know, that's the question you'd ask. But, you know, to answer a question that way in itself is really amazing, you know. But, yes, pieces are coming out now. Do I think it's going to be I don't think it's going to be as toxic as it was, let's say, for Gingrich, or particularly – toxic as it was for Jim Jordan, only because, you know, people are kind of numb now to the whole scandal side of things. It's just, they're numb. So I think this will come and go. Now, future actions that he'll have are going to be controversial because he's going to satisfy the caucus. But then again, the caucus itself are kind of hypocritical. They threw McCarthy out because he wanted to not have a government shutdown. And here comes Johnson on the heels of that saying, well, let's go till April.
Yeah. Let's have a government shutdown right away.
And everybody's like, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. April. Sure. All right. You know.
Now, I do find it interesting
it's a different,
that the new speaker's eager to get back to impeaching Biden because he says he's ready. And he says the impeachment inquiry faded. And they're ready to get back into this, and I'm sure you saw today that they're claiming direct evidence that Biden laundered money, according to James Comer. He said bank records obtained by the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability have revealed a $200,000 direct payment from James and Sarah Biden to Joe Biden in the form of a personal check. His brother wrote him a check. It's direct evidence of money laundering.
Well, we'll see what's out there or not. We hear a lot of things. The proof, I guess, as they say, is in the pudding. I frankly doubt that they would impeach Biden anyway. I really do. You know, McCarthy did this to try to save himself. This speaker is not going to agitate, quote, the crowd out there. He's going to continue to pursue some things. I don't think this one, though, would launch into it in the middle of 2024. I really don't think so.
Yeah, I had someone email me and said, you know, right in the memo part, it said, you know, 10% for the big guy. And I go, no, that's only the one. That's only the check coming out of Byron Donald's office. Because if you remember, they had doctored some of the things in the one hearing.
Right. And they had said they had certain items and they didn't have them. And like I said, the proof's in the pudding.
Yeah.
If something did happen and they have it, then it will come out. If it's spoken about verbally and not confirmed and they can't link something directly, then it's not going to exist. We have heard about things in the past that never materialized. It's like the people that were trying to say that the elections were stolen. They would do a press conference and they would name Rudy. Rudy was great at this. He would name four things. Here's what they did. They did this. They had workers going in the building. And, you know, we're going to go after this. And then when you look at the lawsuit, it's not even in there.
Not a peep.
Not even in there. So same thing here. If it, you know, they can say what they want or what they think because the press will print that. But then the proof is going to be, you know, do they have the evidence?
Yeah. Finally, lastly, Chuck Schumer evidently has told Democrats that he is going to file a cloture vote on three key military nominees. Finally going to try and go around Tuberville. Now, understand, you know, the guy heading up the carrier group in the Gulf right now is a guy that Tuberville is objecting to. About time, don't you think?
Well, let me just say this. Democrats used to say this. I'll give you a little inside nugget. Democrats used to say it with Republicans when we were on the floor of the House, not at the microphones. And we used to say, you know, we call it the peacock farm. And then one Republican said it, you know, pretty good. He said, you know, Bill Clinton is the opponent. The Senate is the enemy. And so there's always been that House attitude to the Senate. But this amazes me about Chuck Schumer. And I've seen Mitch McConnell do this. You know, the bravery. It's like a JFK profile in courage. We're gonna do the nuclear option. I love the verbiage they use, you know. The nuclear option. All they're going to do is do what they should have done. How they let him, Tommy Tuberville, honestly, how they let him go on, they meaning the Republicans and the Democrats,
yep.
Schumer included, it's a sin. He has been torturing the entire system, almost destroying over 200 and some appointments, our very military, you know, base, and he's been doing it. And who was so afraid of offending him? You know, this isn't a nuclear option. This is common sense. Should have been done a long time ago.
I'm right there with you. It's called doing your job. Maybe we should try it sometime.
That's it.
There we go. Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1835. That was the day that workers in Philadelphia organized what was the first general strike in North America. Their call was for the 10-hour day. The Philadelphia strikers were influenced by earlier actions in Boston. Carpenters in Boston had gone on strike for the 10-hour day as early as 1825. The workers in Boston declared, "We have been too long subjected to the odious, cruel, unjust, and tyrannical system which compels the operative mechanic to exhaust his physical and mental powers. We have rights and duties to perform as American citizens and members of society, which forbid us to dispose of more than 10 hours for a day's work." It was Irish workers on the Schuylkill River coal wharves who started the Philadelphia strike. Printers, carpenters, and city employees soon joined the cause. In all, 20,000 workers walked off the job and idled the city. The Germantown Telegraph fretted for the well-being of the workers, printing, "The brevity of only a 60-hour work week would be harmful to workers, that all the extra time would be applied to useless and unworthy purposes." After only 1 week, the city caved into the demands of the striking workers. Workers would henceforth work from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., with 1 hour off for lunch and one for dinner. The success of the general strike electrified the labor movement, and a wave of strikes swept the East Coast. By the following year, the 10-hour day was the standard for skilled workers. In 1840, President Martin Van Buren instituted the 10-hour day for federal employees. In our present day, with the increasing attempts to weaken the power of workers and their unions, we must remember our history and our past successes. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Remember, subscribe to the podcast. Never miss a moment. Looking forward to our big move and don't want to lose anybody along the journey. Also, make sure you check your local cable providers, your streaming devices, and find Free Speech TV, where we are going to be calling home in the new year, and looking forward to that. Got an email from Rob Roberto, who says Toyota does not have a pension plan. And look, you know, this is a big part of that compensation that we don't talk enough about. And you know, you look at the fact that a number of the UAW members, their pension plan took a major hit. And a lot of the temp workers didn't have anything. And, you know, this is hopefully going to move in a direction to get them back on board as well. But that era that I grew up believing in and was fortunate enough to work under, that you made a good wage, you had good health insurance, you had a good defined benefit pension that gave you the opportunity to make sure that you were going to have something in retirement, that was the norm of what a job should bring. And now we've moved into this era where, you know, you're just a cog in the wheel. You're a gig employee. You're on your own boss. And you're still working for poverty wages. You're still struggling to make ends meet. You're still working two and three jobs, but there's nothing at the end of the road. And again, this is something that we don't talk enough about. You know, I know when... the company that I work for, the guy who does the hiring, was complaining that they were having a hard time, you know, hiring new people. And I said, look, you know, when I started in this industry, wages were considerably higher. This was a gold standard kind of working class job. And today's dollars probably made at least 12 to 15 bucks an hour more back when I started as compared to today, when adjusted for inflation. Still with the great health care, still with the defined benefit pension. But those jobs were available back in the late 80s. There was still a sufficient union density where those jobs were still around. What's happened as corporate America has been allowed to crush organized labor is those jobs have gone away. And not only have they gone away from you know, having the good union wages and benefits, they've gone away from actually working for the company. They've figured out new gimmicks on how to have third-party logistics companies and temp agencies that you work for that they don't even have responsibility to you as an employee. That's someone else's problem, and they can cut that contract anytime they want, which means all those workers have no rights, have no ability to organize, because you know, what's the point? If the company cuts you off, that's it. And of course they're going to do that. And this is where I've been saying for the longest time, we need to update our labor laws. We need major comprehensive labor law reform. Absolutely. But to get to that point, to get there, you have to have the organizing on the ground. Understand, the National Labor Relations Act only came about because workers were in the streets literally tearing this country apart. My grandparents' generation and their parents' generation were literally brick by brick tearing things apart, sitting down, taking over facilities. The capitalists were very nervous. Nervous that their heads were going to end up on platters, and that was a peace treaty. Well, the wealth class has been emboldened to say, hey, let's destroy all that. And now you're seeing workers going back to the streets. And this is why we should be talking about what it is we want as a working class. I think a 32-hour work week is involved in the same conversation as ensuring that we get defined benefit pensions back. That we get the kind of security that our grandparents' generation fought for. That there is a future for working people. Especially in the world of AI. As I've said, I'm not a Luddite. I don't say we smash the machines, but we got to benefit from it too. And I'm not saying all of it, but some of it.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.